You used to go to Quebec to get some stuff.
Not Quebec. Saint-Jean-Port-Joli.
Saint-Jean-Port-Joli, but that's in Quebec.
Oh, yeah.
In the province of Quebec. Yeah, okay.
But it's on this side of it. The way we used to go there, we used to go with our little California rope.
Uh-huh.
So we used to go to the island, Seven Islands, and cross the Deep Oak Stream, and then we used to cross Big Black, and then we used to cross Little Black. And then there's American crew there. There's a strip there that's American.
Yeah.
Somewhere. I don't know how it is, but there must have been maybe 50, 60 farmers there that were on American side. Mm-hmm. And then you cross the Little Black, and then you get on the Canadian side. And you go to Cloutier there. That's 28 miles. And instead of come 6 miles road to Cloutier. And then it's 38 miles from Cloutier to St. John Fudgery. This is a car of us keeping okay. And you take, almost everybody had a pool, what they used to make their bread outside.
Yeah.
They used to make their bread there in August for all winter. They used to put it in the cellar.
Well, and do you know enough about these outside bread makers? They were kind of round, I'd describe them as looking something like a beaver house.
Yeah.
And they were made out of cement or something.
Yeah, out of rock.
Clay and...
There was a long line, you know, in this country. There was no cement. They found that the old book says that they found cities that was buried up. And there was concrete house, but they didn't have no concrete.
No.
It ain't too long, of course, it's a long while, but they didn't cover no, they wasn't even covered in concrete. Then they used to make those rocks and clay. And they used to make their bread there in the fall, put it down cellar, they had a nice clean place down cellar. And sometimes they used to go and get a bread I ate there last time with a little green stuff on it. But they used to take that out and nice, not soft salad, but good bread enough to eat and good taste. It was raised bread. And most of it was made out of course, it's all made out of wheat flour. But that was wheat, that the flour that they used to grind in Canada, you know, it wasn't like the... It's good for little browner. It was made off of good bread, but little browner, and it was a
little heavier than the flour we have now, Bella.
Yeah, and it was
coarser.
Yeah, coarser, a little darker too.
Yeah,
but it was awful good. And they used to make a kind of a porridge with that, just like oatmeal, and that was awful good to eat too.
They used to make the oatmeal bread too, didn't they?
Oh yeah. But not in old times. That oatmeal bread. And cornbread, that was through the Depression after the First World War. There was a while then you couldn't get a lot of good flour, and they used to furnish that kind of flour and that oatmeal.
Where did you get your flour from in those days? They used to manufacture it here? They had mills, flour mills, or what?
They used to have flour mill at Leicester. They used to grind buckwheat and wheat, but all the flour used to come, I don't know where, it used to come in barrels.
Yeah.
Barrels after barrels. And pork, old Thomas told me in Chicago, there where they used to kill the pigs there, it was just like logs going up on the sluice in the mill. They used to bleed the pigs in another place, they used to tin them and pick them up, and when it came out of there, it was salt and barrels.
Yeah. Salt pork.
All pork. And that was an awful thing, so there was, it was all salt pork. I sliced this in my days there, for men, 50 men, a barrel of pork in 3-4 days. Used to fry that, you know. And it was pretty good. You used to put that in a great deep pot, and you used to parboil that. You used to put about a depth of molasses into the water. And that would red your fried pork. And try that for the dry, that and molasses, and the grease of that, boy, you could make good meat.
Used a lot of molasses.
Yeah.
A lot of tea.
Yeah. But there was a while there when they used to put the tea. That was the first one that I wanted to work. But after that, they used to send molasses. But the old time, they didn't give no molasses in the woods. They used to put a handful of tea in a dipper, and the dipper would fill it up with molasses. And the chopper used to have that. That was his job, to carry that in the woods for them. And the swamper, he had the lunch box. And that poor little swamper, some of them, you know, was no more than 10, 12 years old, and they had that big lunch box on their backs. And then it was just boiled, in the winter that was boiled pork. Just boiled pork, frozen pork, and bread, and a piece of ginger. And then, I don't know, it looked like I'm a bloat. But before I commenced cooking, there was hardly no cook. You take like old Brito Paddy, and old Joe Paddy, and George Redmond, and Jim Crawford, and it was all boil and boil, and we didn't have too much for everything. But me, I got making custom, and I got making mince meat, and I used to cook that deer meat in the oven. I used to boil it a while in the pot, and then I used to put it in the oven, and I used to make dough boy, you know, flour, just like the bread, and then you cook that in the juice of that, and it used to make pretty good. And mincemeat pie, that I usually use in a pie, in a mincemeat pie, you can almost put anything into that. You know, old pork and bread, and the apples and the raisins and the brown sugar and the molasses, gives a good taste with spice. And you take a pie like that and warm that in the oven in the morning for breakfast. A lot of men don't eat beans at all. They eat just a few of the pie.
You didn't just have bread though, Bella. You had biscuits too. You made a lot of biscuits.
Oh yeah, sourdough. There was no way that was biscuit.
Yeah.
There was no eat bread with that.
Yeah.
When we used to make these bread, we used to make it with potatoes.
Yeah.
But that was a long while after that.
Yeah.
It was a long while that it was just sourdough biscuit. That was all there was to that.
Yeah.
And then the old cooks, they didn't measure the molasses. I mean, they used to take a pan and draw the tin out of the barrel and let the molasses go. They didn't know how much they had. And they used to put too much water in that. And when it was froze, that cooker used to break that in two, and there was a kind of bunch of ice. But me, I'm bloating a little, but it's true. I got measured my stuff. You take I used to put me through the 3 dippers of molasses and a dipper of lard. You got to put your lard in after your dough is thick, because if you don't, you're going to make a little white spot in your cooking, or your gingerbread the same way.
Yeah.
And half a cup of water for 3 dippers of molasses. So there wasn't water enough that the bottle made a good sweet cooking.
You made a lot of molasses cookies too, Bella.
I made quite thick. Once in a while when my wife goes to Pesci or something like that.
You still make them?
Oh yes, I can make them, make them good yet.
You can.
But the fellow that made that mixed gingerbread there, he knew his business. Because cooked with molasses is as good as I can cook with sugar. If you put it too thick, it's going to break on top and be hard. And if you put it too thin, going to cave in. And you take that mixed flour, boy, the color, I don't know if it's a woman or who it is that makes that flour. That was mixed in good shape. Because there's no mistake in that gingerbread.
Bellon, how long would a barrel of flour, for instance, last you in a lumber camp?
Oh, it wouldn't last too. It wouldn't last too long, 2-3 days maybe. I've cooked the year that the don't be all mixed up that I had. So the year that the Misquake Hook Dam blowed, I wasn't cooking that spring. I was riding on the dead water on Little Misquake Hook. Little Misquake Hook was a fellow by the name of Higgins that opened that country. And that was a black country, that Little Misquake Hook. And I was driving there, and when the dam blowed, they come asking me to cook to old Higgins' people. And I got there, and the dam was blowed, and it was about 100 men. And they were all hungry. And they used to haul them great big spruce and put them head first, and that used to go right through that hole. And by and by, they got one that got in there and stayed there. And you talk about all the hooping, and they were throwing bale of hay there. I don't know how many bale of hay that they throwed in there. And then they had about, oh, I don't know, 25, maybe 30 stretches, you know, the hard ground. And we played it. And then when I got there, it was about 7 o'clock at night. It was a little before dark. And about 5 o'clock next morning, I had a barrel of flour cooked in this. Trimmed it out.
Yeah.
I had 2 stones. And then fellas used to come in and used to cook it up, give it up. The dough used to fly, and then used to eat that with that dry pork and molasses. But that night we got beans on it ready, and the next morning we had beans, and we had good biscuits, and then we had corned beef and potatoes, and we had a good meal. But till them fellas got killed up, there was no fun. And then that boom, that stuff was all on shore, you know, all them logs. They had the sack the lake again. Miss Quakehook, you know, tore the second lake and the first lake, so there's no, just a little piece there.
Yeah.
It blew, the wind blows that.
Yeah. Blew it all back.
All back.
Yeah.
But we took it down.
There was big rapids right below that dam, wasn't there, fella?
Yeah.
Horse races?
The horse races, yeah.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of fella going through that dam on all. And if you didn't miss the wind at the end of the dam, you were gone. Because that horse race, it used to be logs that used to go right over that way. And they had a telephone. Oh, every couple of hundred feet, I suppose. But when there was a jam, it was a big jam. And then and the water used to not go in the brook no more, it used to run around.
Run around the woods.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you say on the, you say the men used to run through the dam on logs?
Yeah.
Just one log?
Just one log. I took it down and pulled, but there was a lot in it.
They were good on logs.
They were good on logs. And if they didn't miss that wind, and took the horse race, they were no good at all.
They were gone, eh?
They were gone.
When that log hit the wing was, I suppose, was logs built out on the shore.
Yeah, you know, when yeah. Every log used to go through that dam, used to strike that wing, almost every log.
Yeah.
The end of that wing. So then they used to jump on the wing.
When that log struck the wing, they'd run and jump on the wing.
Yeah. And when I was, before I forget that, Tom Petty, when he was driving the boat there was the drivers where we got in there with the drive on spring there, you know. And the fellows was going down on logs. And the boat was crossing. And there was 5 or 6 fellows was going down on logs. And when the log struck the boat, it used to go under the boat. And that fellow had to be smart enough there to run at the end of the log and jump in the boat. And that railing of the boat was about 4 feet high. And that fellow had to jump in the boat. It was about, oh, 7 or 8. Well, if you see Tom again, you tell him that I told you that, and he said it's true.
Mellon, you, when were you married?
I was married in 13. I got married, I don't want my wife to hear that because she wants that. She doesn't care. As I tell you the other day, I used to come down a stay for the drive up and go where Kate's house is now. It was an old house there to cook. And I used to cook there every spring. And one night she came in, and she was selling tickets for the church, Basil, they used to call that. And when I seen her, I never had time to go with a girl after before that, you know, I was always in the woods. When I was 20 years old, I spent time with people, I was there 14 months, because I was going out to talk. When I see her coming in the door, I said, here's my wife. And that night, I took her home a little, and two or three days afterward, I commenced to talk about marriage. Well, she didn't like it too well. I said, you've got to make up your mind. I said, I haven't got time to play with you. There was old that problem. She had a tan John. He had 56 men, and he didn't have no cook. We were stealing pork, right in Brecktown there, about a mile of Brecktown.
Yeah.
And he was at that camp every day to that house there, and when are you going to leave here, and when is the drive going, and you've got to go up and cook. So the drive quit Saturday at second lunch. We used to have four lunches. And I got ready a little, and we got married Wednesday morning. And Thursday morning I went up from the village, tell you where that store is there, where the National Store was, that's where my father-in-law was staying. And I walked about 15 miles to go and cook to that tent in the night.
You left your wife?
Yes, I slept a
little. You didn't have time to stick around with the wife.
No, I didn't have time to go to much. And then she came up, and we used to stay the weather around it. But I used to have to walk a mile night and morning. And she didn't stay there too long either. She was gone. So I kept cooking there.
Well, in later years, Bill, and when I knew you, when I used to go in the woods and I met you then, your wife used to cook with you in the woods.
Yeah, she was cooking. She was cooking.
Yeah.
Cook, she never liked that too much. After I got jobbing, well, I used to make her cook, but she never liked it. Cut wood, and she's an awful able woman. Cut wood and all water, that she liked that.
She'd do the chores for you and you'd do the cooking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I could, without broken, me now with my brother there, we could cook for a big crew and give them money to do it.
Yeah. Do it easy.
Yeah. And then you're taking 18 when Thomas told me there that I had to take charge, job. I says, I never, you wasn't in the woods too much. I says, I always cooked in the camp. And I said, oh, he says, you'll be all right. He says, you all can get along with men good. And he says, oh, Joe Callahan helped you. And so that I started and cooked. And when we went down to Greenville there, that was awful dull that year. That was in 38, and there wasn't a thing to do. We used to, I cut logs and landed on the St. John River for $4.50 an hour. $1 a day for the depression. And then I went to Mentow, that depression camp. In 18, when I got jobbing, used to pay $150 to the minute. And 20 there, and for 29, money, everybody had money to eat. Wages was high, and you couldn't spend money then, you know, there wasn't hardly no cars or nothing. And they used to put it in that bank. And then some companies that paid big wages, and the logs dropped from the pulpwood dropped from $36 a cord to $4 and a half a cord. And then pulpwood got all. Old side became I used to lend all that money to the big company like Brown and the Blanchett Company. And Thomas had a lot of shares in that bank. He belonged almost the whole bank.
Yeah.
And he unloaded the notes for the Brown, I think for $35,000. And he went for the Blanchett for $35,000. An old client on top of the hill for $1,700. Old John Martin's place to Detroit for $1,700. And so they took him they took a mortgage there on everything he had in God's course. And everybody lost their money. My mother, we used to live on this side, but she crossed on the other side. And she used to have a bag under her vest, and then the smuggling was disgusting. And she crossed butter and eggs under that vest, and that bag, we used to call that a bazaar. A bag, you know, behind the bag in front. And a bag around her, loaded, you know, about 50-60 pounds, I suppose. And she lost $2,700 in that tent. And there was that poor old Jim the wife, too. And that, he had sold his farm to North, and his wife died. And they never hadn't raised no kids, and they never came to bear. He had $19,000 in the bank for himself. And old Charlie Morrison had worked for the Fraser Company, and he couldn't read and write, and it was him that opened up the Fraser Company and squatted for the woods. It was him that opened up for the woods bank.
A lot of money lost when the bank closed, but
Everybody lost everything.
It was hard times.
Oh. And you know that year there when we reached 31, that winter I was cooking. There wasn't too much going. So I was cooking there for the Blanchard on St. Francis here on Grove Road. And we were hauling with two Dunbar. And John Rainey and John Cumney came. John Cumney was the boss of the clerk for John Rainey. And I went in the camp, they had dinner. And after dinner, they come in, they said, the fellas all come in the next camp. For the cooking. They said, any man wants to stay for $1 a day, can. And the fellow that don't want to, well, he can go home, he can't pay him anymore. They all left.
They all left?
Yeah. They had maids, you know, $20 a day in Georgia.
Yeah.
And 100, 150 before that a month.
Yeah.
And dropped to $1 a day, and worked night and day. There was a big steam water hauler coming there. And that steam water hauler used to take the water and the wood 3 miles from the camp. And they used to blow the whistle. And the crew used to make 2 tanks. I used to have to wake up there about 7 or 8 minutes and give them the dinner and give them the lunch to make their 2 tanks. That was night and day or any time, they never stopped. And then log haulers, when they used to haul there from 10 to 15 set of sleds, that was just like an engine on the track. And it was big and big lives. And they used to fire it up with wood. And when it was going uphill, there were sticks of wood, oh, that long, it used to blow right out that stove.
It's a stick of wood about 12 inches long, the
yeah.
way you described it.
Yeah,
fella.
That's the way they used to, just like the wood for a cookstove.
Yeah. They burned it. Did that wood have to be cut and dried?
Well, it had to be pretty dry wood. If it wasn't cut a year ahead, they had to take a lot of dry cedar and rock, hemlock and stuff like that. It had to be pretty dry wood.
Yeah.
Now, the Harlem Company busted on account of the big steam on all of it.
They never were much of a success, were
no,
they?
No, they were too big and... You got them in a mud hole, you never could get them out, and there was all kinds of trouble.
Yeah.
And then there was a flood, and if you were going uphill, that was made out of lead. And if she was hauling too hard and the water used to get a little low, that flood used to melt.
Yeah. Then you'd have trouble.
And then you'd have trouble.
Yeah.
And then from that 31, I dropped that to $1 a day. I learned at Lord's, I mean, at Charlie Gardner's, the Model Valley, below the Model Valley, for $4 and a half a thousand. And landlords on the St. John River and in the Alligator Creek Cooper. When you have a landlord on the St. John River, you've got to make them just like a button and use up a skid on every road. And it's all these hills. And I tell you, it's a job.
Yeah. And then you cut them for $4 and a half a thousand? You
cut them and handed them for $4 and a half a thousand. But then, men was $1 a day, no more.
Yeah.
And grub was pretty cheap. It was just like the old times, a barrel of flour, $5 maybe, and stuff like
yeah.
that.
Things were cheap.
Things were cheap.
They had to be if you worked for those wages.
Yeah. And then, in 26 there, 25, 26, there wasn't a thing in the world to do. Not a thing in the world around here, no one. And they had, they opened up that camp there, Dago, Maine, project.
Yeah.
That ground belonged to old Dago, and they had a mortgage on the 14th Trust, and the National Bank, and they made them cut that wood. We cut 1,500 cords of wood. And there, that was a job. I slept with old Thomas there 3 or 4 nights to hardly get around to get your pay from that lumber. And I was the only fellow who could go and cook there because I could cook. And I had some equipment and for about 30 men. And Thomas used to furnish me the rest of the cooking. So they were caught with me. So we made out a dream that was Mitchell that. Crazy Mitchell was a synthetic member and town manager.
Yeah.
And I went there and I had a clerk, Edgar Bob, I was working for him. And if you wanted to go in the camp to work, You have to sign that check over to me, $22 an hour. So I see $5 out of that check for 2 weeks' board.
$5 for 2 weeks?
Yeah. And him, he was getting 22 and a half to see.
Yeah.
But we had, so Tom O'Dell and him, he was handling the red front.
Yeah.
And to get my trade, he used to cash them checks every 2 weeks. 2 weeks, it was $8,000 payroll, you should get every 2 weeks. So Tom used to get in the town office. The town office was somewhere there where Daigle's garage is now. Somewhere.
Yeah, about where Guy Daigle's store is.
Yeah, somewhere there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember when the town office was there. Mitchell was town manager.
Yeah, yeah. So they used to get in with their check. And they used to give it to town manager. And Tom went on and used to pass their check and keep $5 for me and give them that every 2 weeks. That made $22 a week.
Yeah.
So it made a check for his whole.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then you had a pretty big farm out in Violet Settlement. How did you get out there? You bought the farm, or?
Well, I bought a farm. I bought a little farm from Uncle Kettle. And then a little house.
Yeah.
And I bought that before I got married, when I was cooking there. And after I got married, the next spring there, my wife and Albert went there, and there wasn't just a single floor. On top. I was so mad when they burned that little house of mine. It's wrong to burn that. I didn't want that burned. I wanted to see where we come in. And I went there and I made a table. We made a little cupboard. And Willard was a small baby then. She made out. And I used to cook there in the night and in the day. And I used to go up and help Sam Carl on the farm. And then I bought 25 little farms. I owned the old settlement.
Yeah, I know you did it one time.
Yeah. I own them yet pretty near all.
Yeah. Still own most of them, huh?
Own most of them.
Yeah.
I had the Collins lot there, 560 acres. I sold that to a fellow by the name of Grant. And then I sold the Jerry Hartford lot the other day to Paul Kelly, cool man.
Yeah.
And then I bought that mountain there. This place here, though, that was yesterday. Uncle Dado saw it in this side of the track. But on the other side of the track, on the corner farm, I paid $400 for that. And the town went on and farm, I was in the town office, and Dave Dagle got mad about his taxes. And he said, would you give me $1,000 for that? He said, $200 down and $200 a year. I said, yes, but the only thing, I said, I want to pay you tax. We said all that. I've been selling a lot of lot. I wouldn't want to sell much, but I...
You sold a lot of land up there.
Yeah. I made good money there. I made money to beat hell when I was young, for a man without any education.
Well, you worked hard.
And
you
I worked hard. Lucky. I had that old man Comer, and then I had the main potato growers, and then I had old Page. I planted potatoes there for the Star Factory when the Benedict came.
Old Page, you say, that was Hamp?
Yeah.
Hamp Page, yeah.
If I wouldn't want to see old Page and Alice Sunday after the first mass, they'd hung me.
Yeah.
I had to go there every Sunday. And poor old fellow, before he died, he said, Dylan, he said, no, he said, I want you, he said, to not forget Alice, he said, you come and see her every Sunday just the same as you do now. Poor Alice, I went and see her 2 Sundays and she died.
Yeah.
I went then she wanted to go to this. Is that thing going? They said that fellow was crazy to talk from one thing to another. That was
wrong. Well, that's what we want, I guess, that we get down to where some people will know the people that we're talking about.
Yeah. That old Page, that was the queerest man in ways that I ever seen. Religious, there wasn't more religious than man believing in God, you know what I'm saying, in the world, I don't think.
One time, he'd never go to church.
No, never go nowhere.
No.
Stayed right home.
Once there was a new priest that came, and the priest made two colors. And I went there, and Alice says, that priest says, quit, yeah, what are you to make on the one color? He says, color. And he made me two. I said, I don't know. He says, well, I'm going to tell you one thing. He says, that's either one of your damn business. I don't want you to talk about that at all. That's the priest's business. He says, thank you, for mine. And I don't care how, if he knew you there and you were on the job, or me or Jim or any stranger would go and talk bad about you, you know, little things. He'd just mad. He wouldn't talk against nobody.
No.
And I don't care how much a man owed him or anything like that, he burnt you out of bed and he never said a word about that fellow's holding this and that. That Bill is an awful nice man.
Oh yes, Bill's a nice
Bill
man.
Bill too, but Bill's a nice man.